passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Ohm Times, where we are changing the world. Wait for it. Time. And here on the Dr. Kevin Show, we do like to start reminding everybody that it is a show. So you know what? You make a difference in the world by showing up. You make a difference in the world by showing up, speaking out, taking an action. You don't make a difference in the world by sitting around on your backsides and complaining. That doesn't get you anywhere. So if you would like to be part of this conversation, if you would like to join and perhaps get some enlightenment from today's guest or from myself, if you would like to express something, share something, or try to reach out and make a difference in the world, you may do so by calling 202-570-7057. Again, that's 202-570-7057. And if you don't want to call in, you can come to facebook.com/mydrkevin. That's M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N. So you can come to My Dr. Kevin. Like the page, because I'm a likable guy. If you've never been there before, and right at the top, you will see about today's guest. You'll be able to post. If we talk about something, we will post it there on that website. And we will share whatever you have to say on air. So here is your possibility. Now, if you're listening to this show and it's not Thursday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, that means you're listening to one of the replays. But you can still be part of the conversation. You can still go to facebook.com/mydrkevin. You can still weigh in. You can still ask a question. And I have been known to chase guests down, pick them up by their ankles, and shake an answer out for you and make sure that your question gets answered. So that being said, for those of you who have not been around for a while or maybe joining us for the first time, we like to let you know that I always start, before I even introduce today's guest, by talking about my hot topic. Now, my hot topic is something that either makes me feel warm and fuzzy, or it gets me hot under the collar. Today, it's a hot topic that does both. Two for the price of one. And how many people out there don't like a twofer, right? So today's hot topic, which I have posted a link to just before we went on air, is about a young man who was a valedictorian of his class, and he was accepted into Georgetown, but he needed to get financial aid, and he needed to apply for stuff. And his parents, because he was gay, had basically disowned him, which means that his hope to go to Georgetown wasn't going to happen because he couldn't afford it. He got accepted, not an easy task. But because his parents had a problem with his sexuality and decided to disown him, then he got punished for it. Now, they disowned him. They said, hey, you know what? You live a lifestyle we don't agree with, and we're not going to do anything to support it, and that's okay. You know what? The kid's 18. He goes on, and you learn from it. It's painful, but you learn from it. But it was blighting his chances to get the best education possible because the school said, well, we need your parents to do this. He went out and started a teacher of his went and started a GoFundMe. And with the idea of raising enough money for the first year for him to get in and see where it went from there. They raised enough money for the first 3 or 4 years. I do have the story. It is sitting there on facebook.com/mydrkevin. So I'm warm and fuzzy that these people came and said, hey, here's a valedictorian. Here's somebody that earned the right to go to one of the better schools, one of the best schools, and we don't think this is fair. It got me hot under the collar because I know other people, including myself, that happened to. That I had a step-parent when I was accepted into a university for a very inclusive program who basically would not fill out the financial aid, not be on the hook for it, not have to pay for it if I begged out, just had to fill in the facts to see if I could get grants or scholarships, and would not do it. That particular step-parent said they thought I was too stupid to go to college and that I'd never make it through, and would not put their information in. And so therefore, I lost my opportunity to go to a school. So there's a couple of things that bother me here. One, should we be punishing, you know, adult children, 17, 18, 19-year-olds, who are leaving high school, going to college, if their parents are refusing to participate in anything that may help them to get in college? Is that fair? And then, of course, it makes me a little hot under the collar that, you know, I'm sure it was in the name of religion, which means that there's some kind of crackpot religion that can't be true Christianity, because if it was true Christianity, they preach love and acceptance of all. And so if they're preaching, I'm going to hate and disown you, then obviously they're in some twisted cult that probably calls itself Christianity, and there's a lot of them out there. But it's warm and fuzzy because this kid's going. He actually took the excess money to set up a scholarship fund to help other kids in similar situations where their parents had disowned them. So there is my hot topic for the day. And now I am going to introduce today's guest, see what today's guest thinks about our hot topic, and have her weigh in on that. And then we will put her through the Dr. Kevin paces. So, our today's guest is Julie Rosenberg. Julie Rosenberg, MD. She is a physician executive and a yoga practitioner and teacher. She is also the author of Beyond the Mat, Achieve Focus, Presence, and Enlightened Leadership Through the Principles and Practice of Yoga. Obviously, you can tell that she is a perfect guest for our show here on OM Times. Julie, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Kevin.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for the invitation. How are you doing?
Well, you know, you heard me. You heard me, and you know, there's my hot topic, and I'd like to have you weigh in. I'm doing fabulous, but then again, I'm working at doing, you know, fantastic. But fabulous will do for the moment. And we do want to welcome you to the Dr. Kevin Show and tell you how happy we are to have you. So, what do you think? Do you think that it's fair that how these kids get treated, and what should we do about things like this, or is there nothing to do? What are your thoughts?
So are we talking about, when you say is it fair how these kids get treated, are we talking about kids that are gay like this individual, or really anyone who might be disowned by their parents?
Well, let's weigh in on both, shall we? Let's take a minute.
Sure.
And take them both out for a ride.
Sure. So I think for the first one, I mean, obviously your story of the young man is a positive one. You know, he found other resources. And I think at the end of the day, my philosophy is obviously this isn't ideal. A parent disowning a child for his sexual preferences on some level is close to a tragedy in my mind. I think at the end of the day, we really need to take our kids as they are and love and cherish them, and that's our responsibility as parents. The flip side of this story is, though, with a kid like this, where there's a will, there's a way, and I'm really happy to hear that outside the home, he found community, and that community supported him to really achieve the goal that he set out to do. So it's not always fair, right? Life is not always fair for any of us, and oftentimes one could say it's not always fair for all of us. But I think it's really our sense of ourself, our own groundedness, and our ability to create community and find the support that we need will allow us to come out on the other side. And I'm so glad you told a story that did indeed end positive for this young man.
Well, you know, and I think that part of it for me is, and of course, I shared my personal experience, and I still went to school, and I had to go to a different school, and I had to take years to pay for my own education, but I made it, I did it. I think if you are determined enough, you can make it happen. But it doesn't change the fact that I think that there is a malfunction in an education system that doesn't have a process by which that says if your parents are signing off that they are not going to help you one whit, one iota, whatever happens that says that, we should not punish you for your process of trying to get into school. I still think that that is something that is unfair that no one talks about, whether it's because of sexual orientation or whether it's because, you know, like in my story, my stepfather said I was too stupid to go to college. I'd never graduate.
Right. And no, Kevin, I'm not an expert in that area, but I will certainly weigh in that I think there are a number of programs. While I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying, I think there are a number of programs for kids in need, whether it be social services. And obviously, at the end of the day, there is some type of political landscape that perhaps would think favorably in aggregate on these types of situations. And maybe it's something to really rally around at the state or national level so that these types of injustices could potentially be overturned.
Great. So we're going to now move away from that, and we're going to move into the first Let's Find Out About Julie section of the program. And that starts with me giving you the first question, which is, where would you like to take my listeners outside the box? Where would you like to stretch their comfort zones?
So I think as a physician and as somebody who's really been involved in both care of those who are ill and health prevention, and now I'm doing both still, but very, very focused in a broader way on health prevention, I'd really like to talk about health. And along those lines, I'd like to talk about how we can own our health, because so much of what we do and what we talk about is the healthcare system. And I think that the healthcare system has a lot of challenges, and we could talk about that certainly well beyond this hour. But it's really at the end of the day, what can we do as individuals to be able to augment and preserve our health? And how do we understand the state of health in America? So that's what I'd like to touch on.
Go for it. We're all ears. Well, we got a nose and mouth, but go ahead. We're still all ears.
So I think I really want to talk a bit about health misperceptions tonight. First of all, I'm all for people taking charge. Whatever it is, on some level, we've got to take charge. So many of us think that there is really sort of one way to be healthy. And I think there's a number of ways that we can be healthy. And you may have heard this before, both you, Kevin, and of course you, all of your listeners. But, you know, we've got an epidemic in the United States of obesity. And so much of our disease that we see is related to overweight and obesity. And it's such a serious concern, affecting about 40% of Americans now. And as a quick aside, I'll say I just came back from vacation. I was in Europe, and I realized that the obesity epidemic is not nearly as serious there because people are moving. They're moving a lot more. They're going from place to place. And in America, our lifestyle has become so stressful and so sedentary that overweight and obesity has really become a state of being for many people. It's creeping up toward 50% of Americans, and it leads to reduced quality of life. We've talked before, you know, as a broader group, I think there's been a lot in the media about obesity being a leading cause of death, not only in the U.S., but worldwide, and it can lead to things like chronic inflammation and heart disease and diabetes. And more as an oncologist, we're seeing obesity and the chronic inflammatory state associated with the development of types of cancer. So what I really wanted to say on this topic and on health in general, and I really just want to touch on going outside of the box, is it is up to us to be able to recognize what we're doing with our health habits and to be able to control them. And on some level, eating and our diet is one of them. Our exercise and our lifestyle is another one. So when we talk about eating, you know, there's a very good book by Michael Pollan called In Defense of Food. And Michael said regarding that book that anybody should have to write a book advising people to eat food. It could be taken as a measure of our alienation and confusion. So we walk in the grocery store, we go to the regular store, and I understand that eating real food, that would be, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and lean types of protein and this types of stuff, steering clear of all the aisles in the grocery store that are lined with boxes with labels that we try to go through and bottles with sugary drinks and other things that are food imposters that might be dressed up in pretty packages and other types of things that draw us in because of the way that they're marketed. If we really look at whole foods and we know what we're eating, it helps us to be able to control our diet and ultimately better control our weight. So it's not really looking at all these packages, looking at what we call the percent RDA, the recommended dietary allowance, on the label of your food. Ideally, you don't want to have to look at the food label. You want to be able to select the foods that have whole nutrition that allow you to be able to make the best choices overall. So I just wanted to say this as a wellness sort of misperception, because I think there's really a truth here that people are looking for things that might really be in front of them on the lines of whole foods, fruits, vegetables, lean proteins, you know, other types of things that we can buy not on the shelf, but in our produce sections or in our sections where they have meat and fish and the like. And this is an opportunity to really think about what we're eating both in and outside of the house. And so I think I'll pause there, Kevin, on the nutrition part before I talk a bit about supplements and about exercise. But I just wanted to make mention of this because I think we're still overwhelmed. Okay.
We are moving to break, so they can't hear. They're getting ready to not be able to hear you. We'll be back in just a minute with Julie Rosenberg.
Conscious media for conscious minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Tune in to the Practical Intuitive Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Mother, Mother Ocean.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Buffett. West Indian manatees are one of the most unique animals on Earth, and we're still finding out so many new things about them. But manatees are endangered, and many of them are killed or injured each year because of watercraft collisions or other human activities. You can help save these gentle marine mammals. For free tips on what you can do, call Save the Manatee Club at 1-800-432-JOIN. Thank you.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Time. We want to remind you this is now a live call-in show, and you can join the conversation at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. Or you can come to facebook.com/mydrkevin. You will see today's guest. You'll have the contact information for her. Tonight's guest is Julie Rosenberg. She is a physician, executive, a yoga practitioner, and teacher, and she is also the author of a book called Beyond the Mat. So Julie, welcome back. We have no control over the timing break, so when that music starts, I kind of sort of need to just go, and we're off to break. So I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to apologize. I didn't want to, I hope I didn't come across as rude, but I'm enslaved to the clock. Julie, we're now going to move on to the next. Now, I did want to make a couple of mentions. You know, you were very passionate about what you were talking about, but I didn't really get a chance to ask any questions or give any feedback to it. So I'm going to take a second and do that, and then we're going to move on to the next segment of the show. My first question for you is that how much does ignorance and poverty affect the fact of these overweight children who become overweight adults who don't know any different and who have already become addicted to all of the chemicals and the sugars and the highs and lows of really bad eating? Because I think that that's a whole part of it that that sometimes doesn't get addressed enough. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's a major concern, and thanks for raising that, Kevin. You know, what we teach our kids in the home is critically important, but I think the schools, and that's the vast majority of the schools, do teach toward healthier lifestyles and healthier eating. You know, Michelle Obama, of course, had a large program regarding reform in the schools, and this needs to be continued, this type of work. And the incidence of overweight and obesity in younger folks is still somewhat astounding. It's around 35%, but it's stable. And it's not necessarily on the rise as it is in adults. So I think it's our responsibility as parents to educate in the home, and it's the responsibility of the schools and the community to also support education. But it's not just those states you're talking about per se. And again, I think this may be, this conversation is really beyond the scope of what I can add related to poverty, except to say that I am in relationship with the World Bank and Dr. Jim Kim, who leads the World Bank through an organization that I'm part of. And for those who may not be aware, the World Bank actually is addressing this type of situation worldwide, you know, improving health care among impoverished individuals and impoverished nations worldwide, and also setting the pace for improvements in diet and nutrition, as well as the overall poverty and health situation. It's certainly a critical component of it. So I do think work is being done. But for folks that are more in the middle class, per se, which is a lot of individuals, it really is up to the families to help educate the kids. The other thing that the kids aren't doing, though, of course, with the advent of computers and phones and social media, is they're not getting out and playing, and they're not exercising, and they're not engaged necessarily in positive relationships with other kids. And this leads to isolation. And you know how it is when you're sitting at your computer and when you're watching TV or when you're playing video games, you tend to grab some food, and by the end of the day, folks don't even know actually what they've consumed or how much they've consumed, because their attention is really elsewhere and not on their diet.
I think that, and I agree, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think that, you know, even little things like we've lost traditions of sitting down and eating and having conversation and connecting, and also whether it's just taking whatever that blessing is, whether it's a prayer or a meditation or something, it has been shown that you actually will get more nutrients and digest the food better if you will take a moment. Like I always do an invocation when I eat, whether I'm eating by myself or with other people, where I open it up and I thank, and for me, it's I thank the food for willingly giving up its essence and taking it in. But taking that moment and preparing your body to receive makes such a difference. And they don't teach it from they've done studies that said, yes, this is actually true. It doesn't have to be a school prayer issue. It can just be when you prepare your body to receive food, get into a headspace and do whatever you want to do, whether it's prayer, invocation, meditation, whatever, you will get more, you will process it better, you will have, there'll be more of an experience involved. And I think that gets lost. Thoughts?
I agree with that, Kevin. And I mean, I think what you're talking about is more mindful eating. It's
yes.
a quietude for myself. I can just say that while I don't necessarily do an invocation, I do like a moment of quiet. I eat either in relationship, you know, with other people, or if I eat alone, I'm enjoying the food and I'm paying attention to that. You know, I travel quite a bit for my work, and I invariably see people, whether they're alone or with others, when I go out to eat. They're on their cell phones. They might be reading a newspaper, but I'd say a minimum of 65%, 70% of folks are on their phones, whether or not they're with other people. And this distracts us, and it also allows us to, you know, focus on other things rather than our food. So we don't enjoy our food. We don't pay attention to what we're eating. We may eat too quickly, and, of course, we often eat too much. So really a level setting of what you eat and how you eat is very important.
And I would agree. And there's a lot of different techniques out there. And I've been saying for years that, you know, if you buy into the average American diet, into the food pyramid, if you eat the average American diet and live the average American life, you are pretty much guaranteed to get the average American diseases. And the more people around the world that adopt our way of life, the more that their certain kinds of disease rates go through the roof. And so, the proof, as they say, the proof is in the pudding. Since we're having a food conversation, I thought that was apropos. We really have to look at those things. In this section, I like to ask, you know, where you want to take the people behind the curtain, which is expose them to a truth, something that you think has been misrepresented, that in their head there is an old myth or there is even a new presentation of information that misleads people and sends them down the wrong track. It can be about what we've been talking about. It can be something completely different. But where would you like to expose people to something that you think has been misrepresented, to a truth?
So I'll stay along the lines of health and wellness with this. And what I really want to talk about, I think, is exercise, because there's a general misconception out there that if you go to the gym for about an hour a day, and that's more exercise than most of us get, but that's enough exercise for the day. Or if you do it a few times a week, that's enough exercise for the week. And I think there's some very telling facts that suggests that that's not enough, and it certainly doesn't cover you to do that much exercise. So it's very important that we move throughout our day. And basically what I wanted to share is that the data that have come out about sitting, you know, we have such sedentary life in America that sitting for 5 hours a day is equivalent on a health basis as smoking a pack of cigarettes. Now, of course, sitting and cigarettes are not necessarily equivalent, but it's easy to underestimate how long you stay seated, especially if you have a sedentary job or if you're a student, you're going to school. So there's a lot of different devices now and apps that really can measure your activity. And I'd really encourage folks to think about how much uninterrupted sitting they're doing and try to find creative ways of not sitting as much, because you really need to aim for some type of exercise, even if it's short bouts. And I'm talking about getting up, walking around the building, going up flights of stairs, taking a break and just walking if you're in an environment that allows you to do that, you know, 5-10 minutes every hour if you're able to. People are designed to move, and we are sitting at work, we are sitting when we travel, and we are sitting because we want to sit, because we're engaged with our social media, or we engage with other things that disallow movement. So that hour a day, if you do that, or if you just do it a few times a week, it needs to be augmented with a lot more movement throughout the day. And so my challenge for folks is you got to aim for breaks that allow you to move, that allow you to stretch, that allow you to have a different level of cardiovascular fitness. And this, coupled with paying attention to your eating, what you're eating, how you're eating, will really, I think, put you in a different place. That awareness is absolutely key. Insight is key to behavioral change and to developing new habits.
Well, I think that there's a, you know, and there's a couple of different things out there. I'm at my computer as I'm talking to you, do this interview, but I have a standing desk. And just by the fact that it's a standing desk, I move around, because you can't stand in one place for too long. So you're given to just some kind of movement. I also think that the bounce ball chairs, if you can't have a standing desk, but for the person who has to work the 9-to-5, and you know their boss is not going to be happy if they get up every hour, though they should, for 5 minutes and walk around the desk or whatever, they'll think better. It's also better for emotional health, which oftentimes people don't talk about. When people come to me in my practice and they talk about depression, one of the first things they say is, you know, don't talk about pills, talk about activity, action, and then diet, and then let's talk about depression, because all of those will impact depression so much in a positive way. So, you know, I think that, so what do you think of standing desks or the bouncing balls that you can be on if you do have to sit at a computer? Do you think that that really does help or not?
I think that whatever works, you know, not only are there standing desks, there are treadmill desks. I like both the standing desk and a seated desk if you can work at it. You know, in other words, if some people have trouble working effectively at the standing desk, but I think the whole idea is find something that works for you and keep it up, whatever that needs to look like, you know, whether it's the standing desk, whether it's a seated desk with a lot of breaks, whether you can get up early. You know, my personal habit is I get up early. I go to the gym most every day, and I also do some breath work and yoga practice, and I actually do yoga at my desk, which I talk about in my book, as you mentioned, it's Kevin Beyond the Mat. I think stretching and keeping ourselves limber from back pain, neck pain, that's important as well. So it's really getting into a rhythm. And I always tell people it's whatever works for you. I think the ideas you have are good ones, and there's a lot of things out there. But, you know, as Americans and as consumers, we're often caught up in what we can get. And I just don't want people so caught up in what they can get that might augment things, and then they put it away, they spend money, and they don't use it. But what can you do, maybe with what you have in the here and now, to make things better for yourself? You know, I periodically take conference calls that I'm not leading, where I'm just a listening participant. I may take them with a headset, and I may be walking during a call. And, of course, when I'm leading something, if it's a meeting or what have you, I'm typically leading it in a way where I might be seated or I might be standing, but I oftentimes encourage, because I'm aware how critical this is, my participants in meetings to be able to stand up, take a stretch. And I even do this when I'm giving talks, and the talk, especially when it's near to a lunch hour, people are often sleepy. So movement is key, and, you know, regulating our food intake during the day, of course, is also key. And as you've said, with your folks that are coming in with complaints of depression, while certainly depression is an organic disease, movement is so key and good nutrition is so key. It often augments other forms of therapy in terms of ameliorating that disease as well as other diseases.
Absolutely. People a lot of times don't get that there's the connection between your activity level, your getting out into fresh air or nature in any way, and your diet with, you know, I mean, I know there are things like chronic depression. I'm not trying to say that is that's a magic pill, but, you know, doing all the things you can do naturally. I think other people also at times make excuses like, well, I'd love a standing desk, but I can't afford it. Like you, the other side of, you know, people spend money and then don't stick with it. But, you know, I got a $30 banquet table and put a little $15 thing on top of it that I got at an office supply store and created a standing desk that's cheaper than any desk you're going to go out and buy because I was motivated to do it. And I think that one of the things that you're saying that's most important is awareness and motivation. You've got to be aware that you want to make these changes, that you want to feel good, that you don't want to fall victim to as I call them, the standard American diseases, whether that's physical or emotional. But that so you have a motivation to do it. But just the awareness, just sometimes keeping a food log to just say, what do I actually eat in a day, is profound for people. They have no idea what they put in their mouth until they write it down.
Right. And so, it comes down to whatever you can do, whatever works. But it doesn't need to cost a lot of money, and it doesn't necessarily need to take an inordinate amount of time. But we really have to protect ourselves. And, you know, one other thing I wanted to say, because we don't eat well as a society, you know, a majority of Americans are taking a lot of dietary supplements. This is a huge business. And while some supplements are helpful, you know, for example, vitamin D and some amount of calcium is typically helpful for folks in maintaining good bone health. Supplements are not regulated or tested like drugs, and there's no large clinical trials, which are the gold standard, of course, in medicine. There's no large clinical trials that tell us that specific supplements like vitamins and minerals and things like this are the things that they market and sell, that a majority of these things really are going to be healthy, for us to take them, but yet we take them as food substitutes, or we take them to improve our health, and they may not do either of those things. So I think, once again, folks ought to be very mindful of supplements they're taking, maybe confer with a physician or a good nutritionist before they take something, and really feel confident that what they're taking will support their good health and not be in any way detrimental to it. So that's an area where we potentially can save time and money in perhaps buying things we don't need and shifting our focus to whole foods.
So, you know, and there is our break. We're going to be right back with Julie Rosenberg, a physician executive, a yoga practitioner and teacher, and author of Beyond the Mat, here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
The Real Conscious Connection, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage, because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing and a summer evening. It's everybody over for Sunday dinner and your family sleeping in their own beds at night. Making Home Affordable is a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is Why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show here on OM Time. Remember, we are a live call-in show. If you would like to speak to either Dr. Julie Rosenberg, MD, author of Beyond the Mat, or myself, you can do so by calling in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. Or you can come to facebook.com/mydrkevin, M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N, where you can leave a comment and we'll make sure we share it. If you're not listening to this on a Thursday night between 6 and 7 Eastern Standard Time, then you're listening to a replay. If you're listening to a replay and you have a question, you can still post it. You can still look at the, listen to the show, post a question or a comment, and either myself or I will reach out to Julie and see about getting an answer for you, because I'm sure that either one of us would be more than happy to answer any questions for those of you who might not be listening to the show live. Julie is also the author of Beyond the Mat, Achieve Focus, Presence, and Enlightened Leadership through the Principles of and Practice of Yoga. And you can come to the website to see where you can get Julie's book and more about that book. So we were talking about supplementation before we moved into our last segment. Julie, you still there?
Hi, Kevin. I'm here.
Okay. Just always check. Sometimes, you know, when you have all sorts of technology involved, I've occasionally been known to be talking to somebody who for some reason got disconnected. One of the things that you said about supplementation, and, you know, as somebody who has had a practice for a long time, and I help people, and supplements are something I work with, I see people that bring in bags of supplements, and I cringe. I cringe because, A, most of the bottles are full. They never took them. They didn't understand what they did for them, and they had no idea whether they were going to help, and they didn't participate. And they didn't talk to somebody who knew what they were going to talk about, knew what they were talking about. So I completely agree. On the other hand, I rarely would ever send anybody to their physician to ask about supplements because physicians aren't educated in them. It's not something they study in med school. And unless they've gone out and really taken a true course in herbalism or, even homeopathy or aromatherapy, there are people who are trained or educated professionals that work in these fields. And the problem is that sometimes people go to the wrong person to find out what they should do for supplements. True supplements should never replace anything. They're just to get something that maybe your body needs more of or your food supply has less of. There is 55 to 60% less nutrients in the food that comes out of the ground than there was in the 70s. That's a statistic you can look up. Our food has less in it because we've been abusive to our soil. We've overproduced it. We haven't refed it. We went into all sorts of chemical feedbacks of trying to make things look pretty at the cost of the nutrition. An ugly tomato may have 10 times more nutrients than a pretty tomato. So I want to warn our listeners, don't go to a person who is going to be not knowledgeable for the question and may have a prejudice about it. I have found many MDs are very prejudiced, and that comes from my personal experience. I've been told, oh, I heard you take supplements. Don't do that. That could have caused your problem, when that had nothing to do with the problem that I was having. I want to caution people on both sides. Don't buy stuff you're not going to take. Don't buy stuff you don't understand. Don't work with somebody who can't help you go through that. On the other hand, don't ask the wrong person the question. And I can safely say that at least 8, if not 9 times out of 10, if you go to your MD and you really want to know about how supplements might help a health issue you have, they're probably not going to know unless they have gone out and done individual separate courses of study. So I know on my show we talk about you have two kinds of MDs. You have managing director MDs that will gather information and deal with all the other professionals in your life to help you make good centered decisions of how you want your healthcare to go. And then we have MDs that are minor deities that think that they're gods. And if they didn't hear it from the pharmaceutical rep, they're not going to share it with you because that's the only way they get their continuing ed credits. So I do want to put that response out there for my listening audience, because I have been fighting with MDs for 30 years about things that they were talking through their hat because they had no knowledge of. Feel free to comment.
Well, I think you make good points, Kevin, and you know, I'm not here to refute that. I do have to say that I personally am in a community of folks that is very focused on health prevention, as am I, in addition to developing drugs for patients with cancer. So, as I said, I kind of wear two hats. But I think we as medical professionals, you know, we have some responsibility to be able to educate ourselves and our patients. So while I can't speak to all about all physicians, my words are really just to caution people, because I'm aware that we've spent in the past couple of years about $28 billion annually on vitamins and other supplements, going back, you know, maybe the past 5 years each year. And so, you know, we need to be clear if these things are worth the money, at least to us. And it's good to have good guidance. Are they something that actually will work? And more importantly, are they safe? Because, for example, the drugs that we develop, in my case, drugs that treat patients with cancer, these drugs are tested very, very rigorously for safety and efficacy before they are approved by regulators and before, of course, they can be sold. And drug labels have to reveal very potentially harmful side effects. So in contrast to supplement manufacturers, they don't have to prove safety or efficacy, and we may not know about the oversight of the manufacturing processes. So I think the bottom line of this is exercise caution, and I personally would rather see folks invest their hard-earned dollars in whole foods and eat better, knowing what they're eating and eating mindfully, than perhaps taking supplements that replace what they're not eating. I think that's really the point of this. Buyer beware, consumer beware. Get your information, as you said, from credible sources. Read up on it. And by all means, don't buy things you're not going to use. And do one of the reasons I said you may want to confer with a health professional or a physician is that, you know, some of these things actually do interfere with other agents that patients may take, specifically, you know, the chemotherapy agents. We have to be very careful with patients with cancer and taking supplements. So I would say that group of folks, again, I'm part of that group, do need to know about the supplements. So I don't know if you have any other thoughts on this, but this is really what I wanted to share with you and with the listening audience, Kevin. I just want people, again, to have insight and awareness so they can make the best decisions.
And I completely agree, and that's exactly, and on that point, we are in lockstep. I want people to be educated. I want people to be able to do the research on their own. I don't want them to give their power away to anyone. I don't want them to give their power away to their psychic, their astrologer, their MD, you know, their local witch doctor. I don't want them to give their power away to anybody. I want people to be responsible for their own health care to the point that they understand everything that they're putting in their mouth. And it's an oxymoron to say I'm taking a supplement to replace something that I could be getting through foods, because then it's not supplemental, it's a replacement. And these things were never created to be a replacement. And so in of itself, that to me screams out of, no, you don't get to eat the gallon of ice cream and the 3 bags of potato chips and think you're gonna take a couple of supplements and it's gonna stop you from getting fat or having high blood pressure or cholesterol issues or any of those things. That's the lazy man's way of self-justifying bad behavior. In that point, I could not agree with you more. You should always start with diet. You can always start with what you get. You want to make sure you're getting good food, good quality food. You want to know what you're getting. But you have to be equally aware and research. One of my areas of specialty is ADD and ADHD. I have several books out on it. I have been speaking and working with this subject since the late 90s. And I would send parents in to tell their doctors things about the drugs they had the kids on that the doctors didn't know. And when they went and researched it, the doctors found out I was right. And I'm like, okay, you cannot give your power away to that doctor any more than I would want you to give your power away to me. So I'm not trying to pick on MDs here. I'm not trying to pick on anyone. I'm trying to say everybody only knows what they know, and they don't know what they don't know. And the one thing that I do have a bone that I pick with is I don't think that a doctor should ever, 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 ever get a continuing ed credit from a pharmaceutical rep. I think it's a conflict of interest, and it shouldn't happen. And I think that that leads to the fact that they get steered in a direction with somebody that has a vested interest, and that's not a good choice. Am I anti-Western medicine? Not at all. There are fabulous things that Western medicine does. I just don't want anybody to think it's the be-all and the end-all. Nor do I think that you do. Now, tell me a little bit more about this book, because before this time goes out, you have a fascinating title, and we haven't really talked about it at all. So tell me about the book a little bit.
So the reason I wrote Beyond the Mat, Kevin, is that it is stemming. It's actually offering a structure. It's not a book about yoga. But it is a structure for people for optimal living and leading in modern times. I try to address that which I believe is important to live one's best life. And in this book, there are all sorts of personal practices. Again, I derive this from the practice of yoga and the yoga sutras, but I'm not proselytizing in any way about yoga. I don't necessarily care if people get on a yoga mat. However, this is a complex framework, yoga is, about how we may live and lead with better presence, grace, and ease. So I talk about this in the various chapters, and to just give you some examples of the things I try to highlight are things like, how do we prevent burnout? There are things that are relevant in modern times. How do we move through the world more effectively in relationship? How do we tell the truth? What is the value to us, not only to the others, but to us, about truth-telling? How do we cultivate contentment in these times of political turmoil and so much uncertainty? How do we manage that uncertainty? How can we feel well? Because yoga can actually, the practice of yoga can actually help make your workplace better. What can we as consumers lobby for in our various work entities or school entities to improve our environment? And how can we, if we can't get things through too quickly, again, take ownership of that? What are some things we can do at our desk or in flight for those who travel that can help us actually feel good when we deplane? How can we get through challenges, through anxiety, through nervousness, through the things that come our way? So I really try to go through this. I give a lot of examples in the book, my own examples from others, of people who have really overcome a lot of adversity and ways to find yourself in this, and to tap into your personal power and personal presence to come out the other side. And there's hardly anything in this book, if people adopt these practices, that costs anything. So there are some self-reflection exercises for people to do, but I think that at the end of the day, it's my effort to share what I've learned and to pay it forward to help people with their health and wellness. They're living and leading, and to be happy and content for the longer term. And I practice what I preach. It's worked for me despite a fairly busy job, a lot of personal challenges, family challenges. You know, we've all got something. And I think at the end of the day, it's up to us to be able to manage. So it's sort of a treatise. How do you manage? And this is my attempt to share those learnings.
Well, and I think that that is very important about, you know, giving people practical tools and steering them to give skill sets that are going to improve, that are going to truly improve their overall life. And that a lot of times we look for quick fixes. We look for things that won't allow us to be self-reflective, to be self-responsible, to be self-aware. We want to put everything outside of ourselves, and then we wonder what's wrong instead of being self-responsible and self-aware, and really looking at the consequences of our actions. And, you know, I think it's too easy. So, I mean, it sounds like a great book. I mean, I love yoga. I don't do it as often personally as I would like to. My schedule gets busy, but that doesn't mean that I don't do some of the yogic things in my daily spiritual practices, even if I don't make a yoga class. And so I think that's great. There is a whole, oh, and there's our music. Julie, thank you so much for coming. Author of Beyond the Mat. Come to Facebook.com/ByDrKevin. You can find out how to contact Julie and how to get her book. Julie, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Kevin. Pleasure to be here.